Welcome to Packolution. In this podcast series, you'll hear the experts of the packaging industry talking about sustainability and the future of packaging. It is brought to you by Vatron and hosted by one of its founders, Michaela Wachtel, and sales director, Ton Kniepscher.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Packolution, the disruptive podcast brought to you by Vatron. Today we have John Ryan, R&D Packaging Director International at Kraft Heinz as our guest, with whom we'll be talking about how a large international food manufacturer handles packaging on a global scale. Welcome, John.
Thank you very much, Ton, and thank you very much for this wonderful opportunity to get to speak on the podcast.
Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your career path?
Sure. So I started in Kraft Heinz when it was originally Heinz 23 years ago. I now live in the Netherlands. I'm not Dutch. I originated in Ireland. We had a facility in Ireland where I originally started. And in 23 years, approximately 21 of those, I've been working 100% within the packaging realm. So I started off initially looking within the frozen part of our business, which was quite an extensive part of our business 20 years ago. And I extended then into the Asian brands like Amoy, et cetera. And then I moved and migrated into meals. And meals, we include everything from beans to soups, which was mainly based around our Northern European business. And I moved to Netherlands then 9 years ago, actually to the day. It's 9 years to the day that my family actually moved here, which was a brilliant move for myself because we built a wonderful building or innovation center in a city called Nijmegen in the Netherlands. And it's dedicated to some of our FSQ colleagues and our R&D colleagues.
The 57 building, right?
That's the 57 building, Ton, is right, which is great. We've a pilot plant, et cetera, where we can really experiment. Whereas prior to that, I was based in factories, whereas now I'm in an innovation center.
You already gave an overview that Kraft Heinz is not just ketchup and mayonnaise. Obviously. So could you please give our listeners a brief overview of all the products that your company is actually making?
For sure. Well, I can give an introduction on how we set our business up. So in our business, we set up into two zones. So we have our North American zone, which is North America, which is Canada and the USA. And then everything else is international. And that's the part that I look after is the international business. So as a global company, we've got $26 billion sales, and these are based on 2020 figures. We have a $6.7 billion EBITDA on 2020, and our volume is split 80-20. So 80% of our sales are in North America, and 20% of the sales are in international. We have 30,000-plus employees globally and over 80 factories worldwide. So on our global level, our brands, of course, Heinz is the one that jumps out number one. We also have Kraft Mac and Cheese, Philadelphia Cream Cheese, Lunchables, Oscar Mayer, Arido, US-based, Masters, which is China and Indonesia, ABC, which is Indonesia, Heinz Beans, North America, Quero, which is LATAM, and Golden Circle in Australia, New Zealand. So if I break that down into international, so the realm in which I work in, we have six business units. So we split into six business units, and they are Northern Europe, Continental Europe, LATAM, East Asia, and then ANJ, which is Australia, New Zealand, and Japan. So there are six business units. We have over 17,500 employees. 59% of those sit within factories. We have 111 different brands just within our international zone, 65 offices and 44 factories. So the brands within international. So of course, Northern Europe are going to be Heinz and HP. Continental Europe examples would be Heinz and Plasmon. So Plasmon being our large infant brand in Italy. Latin America would be Heinz and Quero, both tomato based. East main brand would be Heinz. Asia would be Masters and ABC, which is soy sauces to sweet chili sauces. And ANJ will be Heinz, Golden Circle, and then Watties. And they are the main brands around our zone.
Those are some really amazing big figures, I find. Wow.
In the preparation discussion, John, you emphasized that partnerships are key to greater sustainability in the packaging world. Could you please explain this in some more detail to our listeners?
Absolutely, Ton. I think our secret of success around sustainability has got to be partnerships. And I mean, when I talk about partnerships, I mean partnerships across the value supply chain. And that is from our Consumers should be our partners, to our retailers, to all our suppliers. Our factories, of course, are our partners within R&D. So we have partnerships within Kraft Heinz. But of course, external partners, NGOs and startups who are working on all different types of new materials and processes out there. But also our peer companies. We need to be partners with our peer companies as well, because Kraft Heinz as a business in itself cannot achieve the goals that we want to achieve as industry. So that's where the partnership really comes into importance.
So obviously Kraft Heinz is a global company. You just told us where in the world we can find your products. How does your sustainability strategy work? I guess it's really not so easy to work the strategy or work the strategy the same way everywhere in the world and in different countries.
Completely right. So I think about our commitments as a business. So our commitments as a business is to be 100% recyclable, reusable or compostable by 2025. We also say that we will halve our greenhouse gas emissions by 2030, and then we're going to be carbon neutral by 2050. So that's our goals. So our strategy has to work towards those goals. You're absolutely right when you say that strategies change across the zone because of many, many different things, from regulation right through to infrastructure. The strategy can change. We have our end goal. I think our main strategy at the moment is to achieve our goals by using our partnerships as much as possible. And I can give many examples of where that has been successful and where we've really made changes. And I believe we can go even further. So I can give some examples. For example, where partnerships have really supported our strategy and helped our business is things like spouted pouches, which is quite a simple one. So a spouted pouch in Northern Europe was deemed non-recyclable and non-collectible unless collected from the store. And through trialing with our partners in Recoup, for instance, in the UK, who liaise between industry and the recyclers, we were able to trial our pouches through the recycling systems. And we gained a 98% recovery rate, which is an incredible recovery rate. Now, the result that means is that our spouted pouches now can go into the front of curbside collection and is collected with rigid plastics. Because we've completed that work, that is not just for Kraft Heinz. And that's what we said at the time as well when we publicized about this. This is open to everybody. It means that we changed the recycling landscape in Northern Europe for everybody within this format. And that's where partnerships really can change landscapes on recycling.
This ties a bit into my next question. How do you leverage your international scale with packaging suppliers and partners in the whole value chain regarding to sustainability?
Yeah, I think the secret is in what you said, Tom, and that's partnerships. And I don't want to harp on too much about partnerships, but it is absolutely crucial. We influence our suppliers' understanding and them back. They are our partners, and that's how we work with them. So it's not a dictatorship role in any shape or form, one way or the other. So we work with our partners to understand where they're working in, where they see opportunities. And then, of course, we also share our areas of opportunities where we really see we can make changes. And that's where we collaborate and come together. And that's how we use the scale that we have within our business.
I think that's a good point, because even Kraft Heinz, with the size you have, you cannot do it alone, can you?
No, for sure not. There are some things we can do. So if I think about one of the innovations that we're launching this year, and we discussed it last year, is our new cap. So we've developed a cap internally. So we have one in Kraft Heinz where we've been able to remove silicone. And silicone, as you know, is a disruptor to the recycling stream. So we've actually removed the silicone from the cap. We've improved consumers' experience. And that's a real game changer that's happened internally as well. So it gives you an example of how we've used our partners internally to be able to create something that we find is a concern for our own business. We've come up with a solution and now we're going to implement it. And where I talk about spouted pouches, we're talking about the recyclers coming together with us as partners.
And are you using mono materials as well for these spouted pouches, or are they the conventional laminates?
No, mono material, Ton. Mono material.
Okay,
yeah.
Impressive.
And again, just to reiterate on that, we're very open to talking to anybody to share this with anybody, because that's what we want to do. In Kraft Heinz, it's essential that we do the right thing. And what I mean by the right thing is that we're doing the right thing for the right reasons, and we're not doing it for publication or greenwashing or anything like that at all. It needs to be for the right thing. So if anybody out there wants to talk to us about what we've done, we're more than happy to share any information.
So what is Kraft Heinz's position on the subject of packaging-free food, reusability and refill system? What's the position there, and how do you weigh up the advantages and risks?
I think the advantage has to be removing packaging from our waste streams. And as we know, the most important thing that we can do is remove before we consider recycle, et cetera, is to remove. I think there's a place to play for reusable packaging, and food products without packaging is definitely a place to play. Now, it can't be everywhere because of many different things when we talk about consumer safety, consumer hygiene, but there are definitely products that will work. We have done quite a considerable work around within this space. If I think about particularly in our food service business. So in our food service business, you know, we want to do as much reusability as possible, and dispensing is an area where we really feel that we can win here. And we've done some really nice innovations around dispensing. So definitely important, definitely something that we should all be looking at. But again, we need to understand where it can play and where it actually is advantageous to use this type of technology.
On a case-to-case level.
Correct. Correct.
I think the change in the packaging world can be perfectly illustrated by the new paper bottles that you recently introduced. Can you tell us a bit about the journey of this bottle from glass to plastic to paper?
Yeah, Pulpex. So this is another partnership which we were involved in with Pulpex. And we have, with the team, developed a new design within our bottles, as you know, that we've publicized on, we've gone to the media with. This is super important. And why I think it's super important is it's so important for us to trial and test new technologies and push them to their boundaries. Not necessarily understanding this is exactly where it fits, but by pushing it to the boundaries, then we understand where this can play a part, where the material and the formats potentially play a part. Is it a replacement for plastic or glass? We don't know. We really don't know yet. It may and it may not be. It may be that it sits certain locations rather than other locations. It may be that there are other formats that we need to investigate as well. But it's so important that we don't sit and just use the materials that we have at the moment and the formats that we have at the moment and expect them to get better and better and expect our recycling streams to catch up. It's vitally important that we do our part to see what else we can do. What is there anything else out there? How can we push the boundaries of technology? And that's what the paper bottle is about. How do we get there? What else can we do? And then we see where that sits and how it can fit and play with our consumer at heart.
Yeah, it makes sense. Correct. Yeah.
So the next question is really interesting, I find, because you already said a lot about partnerships. So is design for recycling mandatory for companies that you're working with?
Yes, 100%. And that runs from our co-manufacturers right through to our suppliers. But again, they're our partners. We all go on the journey together. We are very strict on what we're going to do. We are not going to put anything out into the marketplace that makes us worse than where we are at the mm-hmm. moment. Something that we talk about an awful lot within Kraft Heinz is science-based emissions. Everything that we do, we base on facts. We have to have data behind it to ensure that we're doing the right thing. So all of our MPD, everything that we run, runs through an ESG checkpoint as well. And if we feel that there's something that is untoward within it, and we don't feel it is the right thing to do, it is highlighted into our ESG committee, on which it will be deemed acceptable or unacceptable. But if it's any worse than where we are at the moment, it will always be deemed unacceptable. Mm-hmm. So it's absolutely imperative. It's imperative for our suppliers to think about recycling, to think about sustainability continuously for the future.
We talked about the global scale of Kraft Heinz. Can you give us some international examples on different requirements for packaging and recyclability? Because I can imagine that if you're talking about a geography like Indonesia, you have different requirements than you would have in Northern Europe.
Yes, this is an interesting one, Tom. This is what makes my life interesting. You're absolutely right. And it's not just a regulation. It's also consumer understanding. So if I start with consumer understanding is much, much different, for example, in Europe compared to Indonesia and what's important. And I'm not picking Indonesia. I can pick many, many other countries that are out there and many in LATAM, for example.
Sure.
As well. So consumer understanding and what's important to the consumer varies greatly. So that's one thing that definitely we need to consider. It doesn't prevent us from doing the right thing. We still need and should always do the right thing. Then there's also regulation. So, for example, as we know in Europe, we're looking at recycled content everywhere we possibly can, which is absolutely the right thing to do because it brings value into the recycle chain and therefore it encourages to do more and more recycling. However, if I look across at China, for example, I am not allowed to put any recycled content into any direct food contact packaging. So I cannot, for example, put recycled content into the bottles in China, whereas I can in Europe. Now, what that does is it brings complexity for sure to our business because we have to separate and segregate different streams. And it's not just China. There are other countries as well that we have other different regulations on. So it does bring complexity. It also can cause phasing within our projects. So we may be able to launch something an X country on day one, but it might take to day 100 before we're allowed or permitted to launch it in country Y.
And what about the physical aspects of a different market? For example, we talked about LATAM, but also about Indonesia or China. The humidity there is different. Therefore, it would have a different impact on the packaging itself, doesn't it?
Completely right, Tom. Completely right. And yeah, it can impact the packaging for sure. If you think about the humidity levels within corrugated, it can really upset things. But also if you think about oxygen transfer. If you think about barriers, we've removed a lot of our ingredients and additives in our PET to allow it to be circular. And what I mean by that is we have additives in our bottles which prevent oxygen transmission. Mm-hmm. And when you run them through recycling streams, it turns the PET as a different color. It's either an amber or a gray color, depending on what it is you have in there. And that means I can't take that material and bring it back into a PET tomato ketchup bottle. And that's what we want. We want circularity. So we were able to remove, after many years of experimenting and testing and confirming and validating that we could do it, we have done it. Now, I can't automatically take that learning and transfer that over to LATAM or into Asia, for example, because exactly as you say, Tom, the different climates that exist there means that the products perform differently, so, which means then we just have more extensive trialing to do. It means that we just have to trial in all these different countries. Something else as well is, oh, we always watch out for is monsoon season, which I'm sure some of your listeners will also be aware of. It's surprising how much, I won't say damage, but concerns that we can have during monsoon season. And in the beginning, it took us a little while to understand exactly what was happening. But that also causes havoc.
So, and also the whole supply chain situation is different in different geographies.
For sure. From distributors to culture, that, you know, we sometimes mitigate the culture part as well.
Yeah.
It's super important for us to think about the different cultures around the world when we're talking about this type of thing. But supply chains definitely change how we operate. And it's not just Kraft Heinz, but the world supply chain, how we operate in different countries vary greatly.
Yeah, I remember an example from somebody from India once who said that we ship something over there in a big truck and then it gets manhandled into smaller trucks up until the moment that it gets literally almost on the bicycle and then is delivered to the store, which is something which you don't take into account when you build or design the packaging.
That's correct. Absolutely, Todd. That's a very good example.
I think it was really interesting. We have reached the end of the episode now. Is there anything you would like to add, John?
I'm going to leave with an example, if that's okay with you, Michaela. My example of probably the best partnership that we've done out in the market at the moment has just happened over the last 2 weeks that we've informed the world about. And that is where we've come together with Tesco in the UK. And we are now collecting the flexible material front of store, which previously wasn't upcycled. It was always downcycled at best. We're upcycling the material and putting it into our snap pots. That for me is a huge win when it comes to partnerships. So we're partnering with a retailer. We now can tell the consumer the material that you're recycling in front of store, we know exactly where it's going and here's where it's going to. So we can inform the consumer. And my belief is that will encourage consumers to recycle further because they see that we're actually doing something with it. And this is a great message to finish with, I think.
I think, if I may add to that, I think it keeps the value in the chain as well. And I think that is critical because, as you rightfully say, if you downcycle it, the value becomes less and less and less. And we only need so many garden benches, do we?
Exactly. And this is upcycling. You're absolutely right, Tom. Yeah.
So thank you very much, John. This concludes another episode of our podcast, Packolution. Thank you, John, for sharing your experience and vision with us. It was very interesting for us and hopefully for our listeners as well. But I'm sure they are. Please stay tuned in this channel for more inspiring episodes of Packolution with experts in the packaging industry.